Okay, ready?
Everybody
settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
You drop the clothes on the skin, it doesn't even have any
control. I'm mostly coming out. Most of all.
There are
circles.
Ooh.
Short round.
Justice Jackson?
They captured Hermann Göring alive.
What are they going to do with him?
You are standing inside a secret military prison. It houses what's left of the Nazi high command.
See? Hey!
Never do that in my prison again.
The governments of Russia, France, Great Britain, and our United States will put these men on trial for their lives.
It can't be done. There's no international law to base the charges on.
The world needs to know what these men did.
Dr. Kelly, Central Command thinks you're some kind of hotshot head shrinker. You will inspect and ensure the prisoner's mental health. The one you'll have to watch the closest is Göring.
He was appointed Hitler's successor in 1939 and is the highest ranking German military officer of all time.
Hello, welcome everyone to Critique Revolve, Rain Man Digital's film, television, and media podcast. If you're new to our podcast, our discussions, you can find us pretty much wherever you get your podcast. Just search Critique Revolve. I am Michael, your host, and in the studio today with me is Thomas.
Hello.
We are going to be talking about, in this episode, the upcoming movie Nuremberg, which is a 2025 American historical drama film written, co-produced, and directed by James Vanderbilt. It is based on The Nazi and the Psychiatrist by Jack Elhai. I believe that's how you say his last name.
I'm not the person to correct you.
No, that's why it was more of a rhetorical question. I know better. The film follows psychiatrist Douglas Kelly, played by Rami Malek, who is tasked with determining whether Hermann Göring, Russell Crowe, is mentally fit to stand trial during the Nuremberg trials. The cast is rounded out by Leo Woodall, John Slattery, Mark O'Brien, Colin Hanks, who appears for approximately 30 seconds.
Dude, right.
And then Richard E. Grant and the amazing Michael Shannon. So my initial thoughts are a bit of a mixed bag of pros and cons. This is a film with undeniably compelling subject matter, yet one that I would say never fully realizes its potential. The premise alone, I mean, exploring the psychological and moral implications surrounding the trial and eventual execution of Göring, Nazi Germany's second in command, it seems almost self-sufficient. It writes itself in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's based on a book that's actually written.
You'd think.
The narrative offers an opportunity to examine how nations confront authoritarianism, as well as the seductions of power, ideology, and charisma. However, Nuremberg ultimately becomes mired, weighed down in what I would call an identity crisis. It's unable to decide what kind of film it actually wants to be. Now, Vanderbilt's direction falters amid a clashing of filmic sensibilities and tonal registers. And what begins, let me see if I characterize this correctly, but what begins with the rhythm and aesthetic of a studio tentpole historical drama soon veers into what I would call a psychological study of Nazism. But then it morphs again into a biographical character piece centered on Douglas Kelly, The film then pivots once more into an intimate two-hander between Kelly and Goring, but then abruptly transitions into a courtroom drama. And the result is not so much genre hybridity, which is what I've seen a lot of people who have reviewed this movie. Yeah, as excuses. Mm-hmm. And it's not genre hybridity. It's narrative incoherence.
I'm not manic and insane. I have emotional hybridity.
I like that. That's good.
What I'm going to say next time I'm having a fucking day and just want to yell at everyone.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the incessant oscillation between the styles just gives the impression of a film at war with itself. And it's not...
You know what it is?
It's never sure whether it wants to be a character study, a political allegory, or a psychological thriller.
It is. If you had not told me any better, I would have thought you'd had three or four writers on this.
Yeah.
With different goals and different approaches and people who thought differently about what's the most important element of this story or the more captivating pieces of it.
Yeah.
Shockingly, it's only by one person. And again, like you said, based on a book, which... It's like a train going off the rails. Like, you had the rails. What happened?
You had the map.
Well,
now, that's not to say there aren't any redeeming qualities. There are. But first, Thomas, I have to get your initial thoughts on this.
So I was really looking forward to this when you had first said, hey, we have this one, because I love World War II history. I love history, but I World War II, I don't know. There's like a special bond, soul bond with that time period. Maybe I was killed in World War II and I'm reincarnated. I don't know. It's always...
You're nostalgic for the good old days of authoritarianism and fascism.
Yeah, that's totally it. No, I've always found that time and that situation in history just really fascinating.
It is.
In a number of different ways.
Yeah.
And I knew quite a lot about the Nuremberg trials from various documentaries and various books. So I was looking forward to it. And you had a great cast. And while there are things to like, particularly the acting from certain people and the production design is there, when it comes to the script, it is very manic. There are elements that, like you said, feel all over the place. I remember being very confused that I had been in an hour and I still wasn't sure where we were exactly going, or that I had an hour left and I'm like, we're just starting the trial stuff roughly now in a 2.5 hour runtime. And that's the thing is this movie's let down by the script. It really is, because it can't decide where it wants to go with things. It has a bunch of different things it wants to say, but it doesn't really know in what order or the prevalence. A lot of the characters that are in it are very, very flat. Unfortunately, some of the major ones as well as some of the side ones. And it feels very, very much like you read the Wikipedia page of the Nuremberg trials and who Goering was as a person and thought, I nailed it as far as a script goes, because there's so many scenes that are hampered by cliche, shallow conversations. These are the kind of movies.
And they're conversations that we've actually heard 100 times before.
100 million times. And it's nothing new. And that's the thing is, a movie...
Didn't it feel like he lifted some of the dialogue from past movies?
Well, not even... It feels like, honestly, and this is going to sound really mean, at least in my opinion, it feels like ChatGPT wrote some of it. Because it has the standard, bog standard cliche statements at the certain times. There's one scene I don't want to get into just yet. We'll save for the spoilers. That is like the scene. And all it does is say the very obvious surface level observation. It's supposed to be this examination of a person, or at least it's billed that way.
Well, as a psychological type.
And it is just, it does. It's kind of like him that we saw earlier this year, where it's like, you thought you were smarter than what you had on paper. And because it feels very much like, oh, I've got all this stuff from the Wikipedia entry, I covered all my bases. It's like, no, you touched on things, but you went very, very surface level. There's so much more here that you could have done. And it's unfortunate to see, because as someone who knows the history and knows what could have been of this movie, it's a very disappointing and frustrating movie, even if it's not a very bad movie.
You know what? Frustrating is the right word.
Uh-huh.
There are things that they do in this movie that kind of wins me back at times. I'm like, okay. And right when I start to get interested again, they change.
Yep. You were on the right path. Stay there.
Yeah, you were on the right track. What happened? Why did you just suddenly just switch into something new, completely new territory?
The movies like this that are built on interpersonal relationships in a closed setting where you're trying to develop a understanding of another character or get into a deeper understanding of human psyche. This is something that My Dinner with Andre is maybe the goat of that kind of concept, but where you have a discussion and the character interactions of different points of view can put you in a position where you then question your own point of view. Another one, and this is recent because A, it's an amazing show, but B, Randy has been rewatching it, is Battlestar Galactica. There are still scenes in that show where I still remember where one of the Cylon characters is in a prison cell talking to some of the other major characters, and just the conversation, the dialogue on these two opposing forces is very real and very engaging. And you're sitting there saying, fuck, I didn't think about that. Or that's a good point. You're captivated by every statement and the twists and turns that the conversation takes. And Nuremberg only ever goes with the very surface level and then jump ship, and then goes to the next very surface level and then jump ship. And it's irritating because you never really get in a groove of what it should be, because it couldn't decide on what it wanted to be.
Just to tack on to that a bit, I think that bleeds a little bit into my point that I had pertaining to character development. The development that we do get in this movie occurs largely off screen, which undermines a lot of the emotional and ideological stakes of the story.
Mm-hmm.
When you miss the very things that you should be privy to, you know, characters randomly shift perspectives and moral positions with little to no explanation, and it just robs their arc completely.
I'm trying to think. I'm not sure if it's a movie or I think it was a TV show recently. I can't remember the name. It's not because I don't remember the name of the show, but I can't remember which show it was, which is because there's probably a couple that did this. But it was either Game of Thrones or The Acolyte, at the end of Game of Thrones or The Acolyte season one, where every time it was starting to get interesting, they'd cut away to the next thing. And I was like, God effing damn it. Like, I was getting invested. You were there. Keep going. And they would just cut away, and it was infuriating. And that's what a lot of this felt like you said, because then all the decisions, all the character development, all the real stuff happened off screen.
Well, dude, like Kelly, Malik's character, Kelly's like his internal descent. And I'm just guessing there's an internal descent
between two scenes, maybe,
because his gradual fascination with Goring's charisma, I mean, that should be the film's psychological and ethical center, but the screenplay rushes through those key moments that would give that relationship far more complexity and texture. The only reason why we believe that relationship was even a thing between the two of them is because they're obviously telling us. It's very blatantly in your face that, hey, you know, we're going to throw this character into the mix so that the audience understands that this guy disapproves that you're becoming friends with Goring. But logically speaking, it would be far more conducive to the psychological underpinnings of this movie to have Kelly himself be the one who understands this dangerous descent.
Shouldn't he have, as a psychiatrist,
you'd think,
understood? And I'm not saying that the actual real person didn't, because I'd like to think he did, but the movie needs to portray that this person is grappling with, if you're talking to the devil and he starts to convince you, that gives you reason for pause to start to say, holy shit, wait a minute, I'm getting suckered in, or is he right? Or does he have a point? Or am I falling into his trap? And then you start to have this internal turmoil.
I think it has a lot to do with that incoherent aspect. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the movie is just written poorly, because the scenes that would be that break between Goring and Kelly happens when Kelly watches the newsreel footage of the real travesty of Nazi Germany's concentration camps. That's the moment where he has that break from Goring. But it was just a scene that was presented, and then that was it. He was not struggling with any of this. He was not struggling with this friendship that allegedly had gone on for, I guess, a
long time. Thousands of hours, he says at one point. And I was like, when the fuck did that happen?
It seemed like it was just a couple days.
Yeah.
That being said, the redeeming quality, since we're talking about character, is Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Without a doubt, if it wasn't for Crowe, this movie would be completely worthless to watch. Crowe delivers the usual commanding performance that nearly redeems the film's unevenness. His Goring is magnetic.
Awesome.
Repulsive. Awesome. And this is the key takeaway. Disturbingly human.
Yeah.
A reminder of Crowe's formidable range and his gravitas. I think a lot of us have forgotten, because Crowe just isn't the name he was several years. Yeah, two decades. Oh, my God. Two decades ago.
A beautiful mind, Gladiator, Cinderella Man.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Back then. Shit.
Now, Rami Malek, who plays Kelly, you know, yes, he brings nuance, but he is underserved by a script that treats his psychological unraveling as mere exposition. Footnote. It's exposition too. I mean, rather than lived experience. And then what they did or didn't do with Michael Shannon is a travesty.
Oh my God, dude.
You don't bring in the brilliance of Shannon. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. You agree. Shannon's amazing,
I
right?
As an actor. He's phenomenal.
He is one of the best.
Gravitas
actors.
Is like the best word to match with him, because he shows up and whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, you're like, oh fuck.
He just owns it.
Yeah.
They sidelined him in a role so underwritten.
He was in the movie. I swear to God, because he's in the very beginning and the very end, and there's the middle part. And I was like, oh fuck. Yeah, this is a whole shit. Where did this guy go this whole
this
time?
This is where the movie starts to feel like other movies as well. Cause you have Malik is supposed to be the psychological exploration. Mm-hmm. You know, that in itself is probably should have been one movie.
It should have been the whole movie.
Because Michael Shannon trying to create and invent case law to try international war criminals is fucking fascinating.
That should have been its own movie.
That should have been its own movie.
You either needed a Goring psychological exploration of power and how it corrupts and the evil of man, or you needed a courtroom drama about trying to do something that had never been done before and make the villains not just Goring, but all of them and all the trials and tribulations and footnotes and painful points of the case. Because this is a little spoilery. Should I save it? Maybe I should save
it. Yeah, save that.
I'll save it. But
be careful. I don't want to ruin movies for people.
Yeah, that's fair. It's such a conflicting movie emotionally. Because you see what it could and should have been.
Yeah. Well, because a lot of these faces, except for maybe Crowe, Michael Shannon and Malik, who are both very, very good actors, they are just
underused.
They're underused, but it's even worse than that. In a lot of ways, they're simply basic narrative devices to keep the plot going.
You can tell that in the dialogue.
Yeah. The dialogue is stiff.
Yes.
In fact, it feels a lot like when I write, when I'm doing my first draft, I don't overly think about how these people are going to say things. I worry more about what they are going to say.
And you come back and
then I come back
nice.
And start fixing the characterisms and making them feel unique. The things they say feel like a first draft dialogue.
And that is like a chronic situation that we are seeing in media right now, is that the final draft is the first draft. I say it all the time because it feels very much like it, because I cannot think going back and not just, you know, being old boomer man yelling at clouds. But if you go, if you honest to God, go back and watch TV and movies from any time prior to what? 2005. Even then there's stuff after that, but at least you have to go back beyond the last 15, 25 years. There is great examples of how to write characters, and that the interwoven elements of personality and what is being conveyed, like you said, from a plot standpoint, and how it works on an overarching emotional range, character journey. There's so many great examples of how what you say and what you don't say is very powerful. And one of my favorites as an example is Tombstone, which is, you know, it's a great movie. But when, I don't remember the guy who asks Doc Holliday why he's out there helping Wyatt Earp on this manhunt, which is incredibly dangerous. And he's like, because he's my friend. And I think he says something along the lines of, I have a lot of friends, but I wouldn't do this. And then he replies with, I don't. Just saying I don't, when it refers to his friendship with Wyatt Earp and how few he has, speaks volumes.
It says a thousand words.
It says so much about his character, who he is, what he believes in, what he stands by, what he'll die for, what he'll fight for. It's such a simple line, but it is brilliant in what it conveys. Whereas something we see now is just literally written, well, I think this and blah, blah,
it's
blah.
Exposition.
And this is my opinion, and therefore I'm doing this because that. It's exposition, and it's not people talking. And that's why I think a lot of people have a hard time getting invested in movies and TV today, because the characters are not real people.
I think this is just an example of a lot of problems we're seeing with movies of late. Much of what is being inserted into movies, whether it be dialogue or camera blocking, whatever it may be, it's just functional at times, and maybe not even functional. It could be simply excess, as we were talking about during our review of Anemone. Is that what it's called?
Anemone, yeah.
Okay, is this functional or is this excess? So between simply putting things in for functional purposes, meaning let's get the ball rolling, let's keep the plot progressing, and then, of course, the excess, where some of the things just are not even functional, they're just not necessary. Where things used to be less functional, less excessive, and more about being naturalistic. Mm-hmm. So, for example, what you're speaking about with Doc Holliday in Tombstone, when he says, I don't, the two words, they're mm-hmm. not functional. They're purposeful. They say, like you said, a thousand words because it's naturalistic. Those are the types yes. of things, and the way it was conveyed, the mood as it was conveyed, says more than any words you can write on a page unnecessarily.
I got the exact quote. He says, one character asks Doc Holliday, why do you do it, this whole hunt? And he says, Wyatt is my friend. And the other guy says, hell, I got lots of friends. And Doc Holliday replies, I don't. And that, like you said, like that is, goddamn, man. Like, I wish I could have that moment in my history book career that I would say that I wrote that line. Because
I think simplicity gets a bad rap.
Yes.
This is something that I have talked about now for probably the past 2 years. Simple does not mean bad.
No.
Simplistic can actually be highly intellectual. Excess can be decadent and stupid. So we need to find the middle ground here. And unfortunately, this movie is more about being improperly functional as mm-hmm. opposed to being naturalistic. And bringing it back to Shannon and the acting at large, it's just squandered opportunity. And unfortunately, Michael Shannon, bringing it back to him, becomes emblematic of Nuremberg's larger problem, which is a film that assembles the right pieces, but doesn't know what to do with them.
And it really is a shame, because you're right. All the parts are there. There's no reason this shouldn't have been a groundbreaking success, or like well revered and hyped. And I don't think it's going to get there. We've already seen a lot of the reviews are saying that it's middle of the road sort of
this
thing.
This should have been Russell Crowe's return to Oscar nomination.
It makes me sad.
I'm pretty sure Russell Crowe probably took part in this movie thinking this would be. Especially when you look at the time of year that it's coming out. This movie wanted to be Oscar bait. And I do not believe it's getting on any was. Have you seen this on anybody's Oscar list yet?
No.
And that's a travesty because Russell Crowe did so well.
He did phenomenal. He really did. And that's the thing, too, is that, and that's why it's one of those reasons why it's so frustrating, because if you know anything about the history, you're like, dude, go deeper. I understand the plight of a teacher because of this movie, where you people just regurgitate the information to you in their essay.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't need you to show me that you know it. I need you to show me what you know about it. Like, I need you to go into analysis mode, not regurgitation mode. And this movie has the right actors, the right production design, the right subject material, the right time period for our own relevance in today's world, regardless of your politics. I think throughout the entire world, this thing is still relevant. And it's let down by a weak script. And that's always the fucking case these days.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Just to switch gears a bit, you kind of took us in that direction. Let's talk about some of those real world connections. Some of the things that are being pawned off as positives about this film, I don't agree with. I've seen people already talking about how this film isn't perfect, but it's urgent. You know, its supposed relevance to contemporary politics and the global rise of populism. Now, yes, Nuremberg draws obvious overt parallels between Goring's manipulative charisma and modern political figures who wield personality as a tool of persuasion. Yet, this allegory feels incredibly derivative than revelatory. The film gestures toward contemporary anxieties about authoritarianism and demagoguery, but does so in ways that are very predictable and didactic. So rather than offering new insights into psychology of power or the complicity of ordinary citizens, it just relies on familiar tropes. And of course, the symbolic shorthand. And I think that's a crutch. Yes. I think this movie took too many liberties. Oh, people know this. People know this.
Yeah.
No, take time, explain things.
But that's the problem right there. People today know this. The characters in your movie do not. You have to write for the fucking characters and the world and experiences that they are going through.
This movie takes a lot of assumptions, specifically with its symbolism to today. You're just, hey, guys, you know this is happening, right? Right, guys, right?
You get it? Ha-ha, see, paying attention, you get it.
Yeah, so I think really this movie just disappoints me. I was hoping for some cutting-edge cinema. Maybe that's my fault. Because when you have Russell Crowe and Rami Malek and Michael Shannon all in the same movie, it would make sense to expect greatness, but that's not what we were given. Instead, we were handed a half-baked, prosaic, and tonally incoherent picture. And that, honestly, is too bad. Cinema could use an intellectual gut punch right now.
The thing is, for me, you're right. It's an incredibly irritating movie because I see what it could have been, what it should have been. It's like, you know, your kid can do basketball and play basketball very well, and watching him like fuck up a layup and free throws all night. And you're like, I know you can do better than this. What happened? And the thing is, I think part of my own disappointment is lack of research, because I went into this not knowing who wrote it. And I look at James Vanderbilt's work, and while I will say I love the movie Zodiac, he also has written The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, the ones with Andrew Garfield that failed.
Yeah, those
Independence Day Resurgence,
which is an awful movie.
Murder Mystery 1 and 2 with Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler. Now, I will say the first one was a passing, fuck it, whatever movie mood. But the second one is one of the worst things I've seen put to paper in quite some time. And it, I should have known better, maybe, that this was not going to be the Aaron Sorkin level of detail and character development that I was hoping for.
Yeah, he doesn't have a horrible body of work in terms of writing. He's
got an absolute mid-range level.
He has some pretty decent films in the mix, but I mean, The Loser, Zodiac, The Rundown.
Zodiac is great.
His early career seemed to be pretty strong.
Even and then White House Down was fun.
Yes.
I gave that one with Brian and I literally over 12 years ago, reviewed that movie.
But then in 2014, it just kind of, I mean, the Scream movies were okay, but they kind of also write themselves at this point. If you understand anything about the Scream franchise and you just have
copy paste the first movie.
In some ways, yes.
I mean, like from a screenwriting.
Yes. Yeah. So he just kind of took a turn in 2014 after The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And this movie is just more of that. It's a movie that wants to be better than it is.
There's characters who I never knew their names. I knew Goering, and I knew the Justice. And
is that how you say it, Goering? Because I always call him Goering.
I've heard Goering in the documentaries I've watched. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's an O with the I don't know what's called, the two dots over the O.
Now that I'm thinking about it, let me look it up.
Yeah, but like I knew Rami Malek's character of Douglas Kelly. I knew obviously Goering. I knew Jackson the Justice. That's about as far as the character's name I knew. There's a bunch of other characters, but I couldn't tell you who they were. The woman who's Justice Jackson's assistant? I don't know. The reporter lady who has a massive role to play and very little screen time. Which is a shame because I love John Slattery, but I could not have told you his name other than Colonel.
Yeah. So apparently Goering is more of the German pronunciation, and Goering is more the English pronunciation. Yeah. So
it's just, it's a shame because it had the potential to be so much more. And again, it's not to say that it's terrible. It's not a terrible movie by any stretch.
No, I don't think you're going to throw spitballs at the screen while you're watching it. But if you are expecting a brilliant historical piece, you will be disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, man. Like, you're just a little frustrated.
And that's the other thing. And this isn't a spoiler, but they skip time for the last
shocking,
like for the denouement, the last, 5 minutes or so. And I don't even understand how they got there. Malik's character apparently, allegedly had some type of psychological downward spiral through the movie that we never witnessed.
Uh-huh. We're told about.
But by the end of the movie, time has passed and you see the Kelly character on a radio show and he is acting like a manic, crazed person who's shouting warnings into the ether and no one's listening. And there really isn't any narrative justification whatsoever for that scene.
No. Well, and that's the thing. There's no, and we'll get into this in spoilers a little bit, there's no justification for a number of things.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's just get into that quickly. Yeah. Give me your RMD score.
Okay. I might say I'll give this one a 63, maybe. Between 60 and 65, so a 63.
You're higher than me for the first time in a long time, I think.
I really liked Russell Crowe.
I know.
Like, he's a whole 15% on his own, like, easily.
He's 50% for me.
And, you know, Michael Shannon's another good chunk of, John Slattery's in it for like 5 minutes, and I give him at least 5%. Like, yeah, let's say let's go with a 63.
Okay. I am giving this a 59% and 50% of that
is
Russell Crowe and 9% is Michael Shannon.
Okay. Well, there you go.
All right, so let's take a moment here, and we'll be right back with spoilers. All right, welcome back, everybody. We are covering Nuremberg, the 2025 historical film about,
quote,
Göring's trial. Okay, so do you want to start this off? Because it seems like you have more of the spoilerific.
This is where I was just like scratching at the walls of my mind while watching it, because there's so many mistakes from a script standpoint, in my opinion, because they set up things that don't need to be set up, and they don't set up massive issues by the end.
Is one of them the Colin Hanks character arc that never went anywhere?
That's not a big fuck up as much as that is a complete waste of time.
It did nothing for the movie. Well, that's because it's
a complete waste of time. But what I'm saying, when I say a fuck up, let me go on an example. The whole movie is about how Rami Malek's character, Douglas Kelly, is studying Göring, getting to know him, becoming his psychological evaluator. This is some Silence of the Lambs trying to understand Hannibal Lecter kind of shit. And in the movie, at the very end, the whole time he's telling other people who will listen, the reporter lady and eventually Justice Jackson, that Göring's ready. He's going to kick your ass. You don't even see it coming kind of thing. And makes it seem like it's this big plan that he has. The entire thing boils down to he has confidence that he was only doing what he was told and had nothing to do with what happened in the camps. First of all, that doesn't seem very confident. I mean, you still were part of a war, dude, but you know, that's kind of me just spitballing there. But anyway, the big thing that he gives Justice Jackson at the end is that Göring won't deny Hitler, won't go stand against the Führer, won't say, I wouldn't follow him. And they use that as a way to say, you know, big spoilers, knowing what you know now, would you still follow Hitler? And he says, yes, he would. And that kind of condemns him in the eyes of the public.
That was a powerful moment, though.
It's a powerful moment that is not set up in the fucking slightest in the movie.
Yep.
At any point, do they have a discussion? Your basic tenet of writing a script is, if this is your silver bullet, you need to have set up Chekhov's gun earlier in the movie, where Rami Malek and Göring should have had a conversation where it's alluded to that he would still follow Hitler, or alluded to that he wouldn't deny him, or that he's too narcissistic to say that he backed the wrong horse. It's only after it's used does they say, in like an ADR move, wow, using the fact that he couldn't turn the Führer against him, what a sweeping win play. It's like, that is, you're setting it up after you've used it. That's incredibly wrong, for one thing. The fact that and I don't know the history on this element because it was not in the documentaries I watched, but the fact that Justice Jackson is putting his entire career and reputation on the line, and you're telling me he didn't fully read the first sentence of a document he's using as, again, his silver bullet? That he didn't know emigration was the word, and he's looking like a fucking stooge up there?
Do you think your problems with the historical inaccuracies has more to do with the fact that the movie itself is just half-baked?
It could be.
Because you and I, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've never really had these discussions or deep discussions on historical accuracies. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big stickler for that. Like, this is a movie, not a documentary. So right. If you take liberties, as long as it's kind of like my philosophy on adaptations. If you capture their heart and it feels mm-hmm. authentic to the adaptation or to history, then I'm okay with it.
I'm usually pretty okay with that.
So do you think that you're so upset just because it's yet another thing that the movie did wrong?
I think I'm very upset because it's A, another thing the movie did wrong. B, basic tenets of screenwriting 101 setups that you don't fucking have and you clearly fixed after the fact.
Yeah.
It shows the first draft syndrome, and it's the thing that you need to sell the pinnacle climax element of the movie. And it feels like an afterthought. You don't set up. Compare this to something like You Can't Handle the Truth. You don't go into the final big confrontation in the courtroom with kind of a lukewarm way to win this fight. It makes Jackson look like a pathetic person who didn't even consider reading the document, and he's supposed to be this great lawyer. He got lucky with the British guy asking this question on something that I didn't know was going to be relevant because it was only added after the fact. It makes the whole, it falls apart from a script writing standpoint. If they had had He Won't Deny the Fuhrer earlier in the movie, that's one thing.
Yeah.
If the translation of the document was wrong, so he says, no, it says emigration in the first line, that's where the translation correction needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would have been, fuck, we got the German wrong. That makes more sense. I fixed that in 2 fucking seconds.
I do agree with you. Just to add on to that, I do feel like you take a further shit on Michael Shannon's character.
You do.
Because then you wonder really why he's here at all.
Because
why even have him here? Because at the most crucial moment in the movie where his character can truly matter, he's not the one that saves or wins the day. It's some other random character we really didn't see that much in the movie at all.
It is the Arya kills the Night King bullshit of you have this entire setup of this other character is going to nail this guy to the cross. And then at the last minute, you take it away and give it to someone else. Now, again, I don't know the historical accuracy. If that's really what happened, a little embarrassing.
Well, you could have done it
better.
Many different ways to where you don't undermine a character
that's
already been undermined with shitty writing the entire movie.
It's his character is just, and that's the other thing, is so much of the dialogue, when you see the footage from the concentration camps, which one I thought was incredibly lazy to just throw real concentration camp footage, it makes me deeply uncomfortable because it's real, which I understand is the point. It's one thing to watch movie violence and another thing to see real shit.
And they're very different.
It's very different.
Yeah.
So that was very uncomfortable to watch, which one I understand. But either way.
Don't you think also really quick? Let me jump in.
Yeah.
Before you go off to the next topic.
Sorry. I'm.
Okay. So just to backtrack a bit. I wasn't a fan of that. Now I understand it was necessary because it's the way the movie was written. But I also feel like there's a lot of emotion during that moment.
Yes.
A lot of weight, and you cheated.
Yes.
Because you really didn't work to get there. And it's nothing that you did on your own. You took actual real life footage. And of course, it's going to make us all uncomfortable. And then it creates this type of emotion and uncertainty in this film. It wasn't earned.
It wasn't. And that's what I was going to get to, is that you took a short and easy route on something that would guarantee make people feel uncomfortable by putting real footage in. And I feel like that is an absolute crutch that was disappointing. One, obviously it makes people uncomfortable. It's supposed to, it should. I don't know if you're not, I don't know if you're a human being, but look, compare that to a movie we didn't care for, The Zone of Interest, where you hear the gunfire and screaming while they're having tea and making plans. That is something that you set up, and through your filmmaking techniques or how you craft the scene gets an effective feeling across. You don't see Braveheart where he gets tortured and what happens to him, but the reactions of the characters watching, the sounds that we hear, the facial expressions of Mel Gibson's characters, he's getting disemboweled. Like, this could have been something where we see the audience and give the actors something really to act off of. And we hear things and it's implied without having to show it, I think would have been a more tasteful and tactful and interesting way to do it. And instead you went for, hey, look, and you just played a couple minutes of a documentary.
You bring up Zone of Interest. yes, we didn't really care for that movie too much, but
for different reasons.
But the way it created that subtle terror was probably
the best thing
about that film.
Yeah.
And they could have done something similar to that. Sometimes better not to see.
Exactly.
If they had taken the camera, went back and forth, reaction shots.
Yes.
You know they're watching something, and maybe show 3 seconds.
Or even we can hear what's being said.
Yes. And you just had the camera sit.
Yes.
On Rami Malek's character.
That would have been, and watch him go from.
And then you switch to the reaction shot of Goring.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go back and forth.
And watch the horror twist and change. 5 minutes
between them as their faces slowly change. As realization hits Goring, knowing that he's fucked.
Yeah. Or Rami Malek knowing that the person he's started to consider a friend is a monster.
Yes. That would have been so much more powerful and character driven, yes. Which is what this movie was trying to be.
And it needed that. And it pulls away. And then what I really hated was every conversation was the cliche answer. After that scene, it's, I was following orders / you know, whatever, the usual Nazi defense or I've made terrible war crime defense. And then Rami Malek's like, you killed a bunch of people. And like, that's as far as the outrage goes. It doesn't go into, obviously you'd be upset that someone did all this stuff, but it doesn't push deeper into how can you let something to that degree, you treat them like cattle, you treat them like animals, like you push farther. And if you've seen any documentaries, you know the pain and horror that survivors went through and accused and said on record in various, whether it was Nuremberg or other war criminal trials after when they were discovered later. It's some really dark, fucked up stuff, and they never go there. It's surface level. When Rami Malek talks to Michael Shannon in the middle of that courtyard, he says, why do you want to do this whole thing? It's like, because it was bad. Like, that's as deep as it got. You hear the story from the military soldier guide, the translator, whose name I can't remember right now. And he's like, the whole big reveal story is that he was Jewish and his parents died. Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but I kind of expected that. But it doesn't, it's someone who knows what happened in World War II thinking that that is enough. It is not a personal story of what happened in World War II. There's no horror story about what you discovered about your parents. The fact that the opening of Inglourious Basterds is the most tense fucking part of that movie, and it's just a conversation. Like, that should have been like the whole Nuremberg movie. And it just, it doesn't have the teeth to go there. And everything that is said is very much, well, yeah, that's the obvious that, yeah, they killed people. A lot of Jewish people died. They were evil. We were following orders. But it doesn't go beyond that. And at this point, 80 years after the fact, you have to throw more into these movies. You cannot just do the surface level and expect it to have the same results.
You know, and just to throw in another wrench here, we haven't really talked about, and maybe you agree or disagree. I feel like even the ethics of the movie felt skewed and odd.
It's because it's trying to say a couple different things.
It felt like he was trying its hand at being objective.
Well, and that's the thing is like, if you're going to bring in his kid and his daughter, or his kid and his daughter, his wife and his daughter, show me that he's a human being who was a good husband or something, or a good father, or that there's this other side to him that we didn't see, to make him relatable to Malik or as a human. Because there's one of those lines that Russell Crowe's character says at the end. It's like, I wonder years from now if you'll even acknowledge that we were human. Because the sad fact of the matter,
it's one of the best lines.
Because the sad fact of the matter is they were human. And we all look at American politics right now. Tell me one side wouldn't do something similar with full power on each other.
I think that's ultimately the theme of the movie.
It is.
And it did come through at the end. The idea that, you know, we look back almost 100 years later and we think, what is it about? Yeah, about 80.
Yeah, it's 80 years since 1945.
Most people just categorize them as monsters. They are disgusting, exactly. Despicable monsters.
It wouldn't happen in America.
And that makes it easier for us to digest that we are humans And we could also very well end up doing the exact type of things.
We have.
Because we are essentially creatures of our environments, and we are slaves of where we've grown up. Our ideologies are largely formed because of the side of the border that we are raised and we are grown up on. So I understand that. That's an awesome way to end the movie.
But you can't staple it at the end of your movie and not have that be something we're mulling over and considering and seeing throughout the rest of the movie. And that's the problem, is that that's not a bad concept. That's an interesting discussion. That's an interesting element that, as that quote at the very end, is the only way to know what man is capable of is to look at what man has done. And to think that we couldn't fall into the same lines, as he says, that just because you don't think we won't recognize it again because it's not going to be wearing a fancy suit or an evil suit, that is something that we should all be conscious of, that maybe the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The Crusades thought they were doing the right thing. The Spaniard explorers thought they were doing the right thing with the heathens. It's always justified based on context, and you weren't there, and the decisions that we made at the time and what have you. But the fact of the matter is, humans constantly fall into these traps because we have amnesia, and we're a violent race that has of human beings that have a problem where we don't learn from our mistakes because we want to hide inconvenient facts like everyone is capable of evil. If you think that a Nazi is some cartoonishly evil character, yeah, they are in video games and Indiana Jones, but they were people who made these horrible decisions. And all of humanity is capable of horrible things. And we don't want to talk about that. And the movie should have gone with that throughout, but instead just staples this on a after credits text. And it's just, it's unfortunate that they do it that way.
What you're talking about currently is indicative of the entire issue we have with the movie. The fact that it doesn't know what it wants to be.
Yeah.
It has various really good ideas, but we never get any follow through on any of those ideas, because right when we think we're about to get that follow through, we move into a new idea and we never go back to the prior idea. So it's just a smorgasbord of interesting concepts and themes that I wouldn't even attribute to Vanderbilt. I'd probably attribute to A, history.
Yeah.
B,
psychology.
Political zeitgeist. C, psychology. And D, is that what comes next in the alphabet?
Mm-hmm.
The book itself. Did I say that yet? The adaptation.
Yeah.
So that these things that are good ideas, I would say, well, good job, Vanderbilt, for having good thoughts, but next time bring them all together. These weren't even his thoughts.
Well, that's the thing. It's I don't need you to show me that you read these things. I need you to show me what you have to say about the things you read.
And that's it right there. That's how we should end, because that's the perfect way to end our discussion.
Yeah. And it's a shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I'm sorry that this Russell Crowe film wasn't far better.
I'm so upset. It could have been so good.
Yeah.
But yeah. Catch it on Netflix.
Hello, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operation.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.